Hello, everyone. This is Omar Alvarado of theparadiddler.com, the blog for all things drumming. Thanks for tuning in to this very special podcast. With me today is a very special guest. He's an outstanding drummer based out of Sacramento, California, and currently he runs a drum instruction website called mikeslessons.com. I think it's great what he's doing with his site as far as furthering the art of drumming, and if you want to improve your drumming, he's a must to check out. He's also the author of Linear Drumming and has been featured in Modern Drummer magazine. He's been gracious enough to grant us a few minutes to chat with him, so without further ado, here's Mike Johnston of mikeslessons.com. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. Let's dig in right away, Mike. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your musical beginnings, your early influences, and that kind of thing.
Sure. I was about probably 6 years old when I got introduced to music. My crazy idea was that I wanted to play the saxophone. I'd seen it in a Huey Lewis video, and I just thought that was the coolest thing in the history of the world. But I got the name wrong. I told my mom that it was the clarinet. She went down to a music store and got me a clarinet, and when she brought it home, I was so bummed and so upset because I was like, what is this thing? And but she was like, this is what you asked for, and you're going to stick with it. So I went straight into school band, and that was, you know, my first introduction to music. Had no clue what a note was or anything, and got into band, and I think on about the third or fourth day, we started working on whole notes and working on our scales, and we'd have to blow this weird instrument thing for, you know, an entire measure and then switch to the next note, and I passed out, and then I, you know, I woke up, and then we did it again, and I passed out again, and the teacher was like, Mike, you're going to kill yourself on the reed if you keep doing this. And he had this high-pitched, cranky voice, and he's like, just go back with the drummers. And that was it. I mean, like, I got put on bass drum that day. Our song was Louie Louie, and I just played dunk, 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 dunk. And I was so jealous. Her name was Candace Alpert, and she was the girl that played the ride cymbal and snare part, and it drove me nuts that I had to play this bass drum thing, and she got to play the cool thing that had drumsticks. I had a big old mallet. So that was the very beginning. And so my goal, I was 6 years old. My goal was from that summer to the next grade, which I think was going to be third grade, maybe fourth grade. My goal was I'm going to be the person playing with sticks. You know, I do not want to play the bass drum anymore. And so that was the beginning. I went straight into drum lessons. My drum lessons went horrendously bad. My teacher kicked me out of lessons, telling my mom that I did not practice. And I was practicing about 4 to 5 hours a day at the time. Wow. And he said, there's no way, there is no possible way anyone could practice 4 hours a day and be this bad. And for some crazy reason, that did not distract me at all. I was going for it. I had no problem with that. I was like, all right, well, then that's your deal, buddy. And I just kept practicing every day and every day. And so the basic rock beat that you would play with your normal, you know, right hand on a ride cymbal, 2 and 4 on the snare, that took me an entire summer. That's how unnatural I was at this instrument. And I didn't mind it. It never bothered me that I was that bad and that my friends were better than me. I just loved it so much that it was like, all right, well, that's what we're doing. And so, you know, I did school band my whole life, starting in third grade. By the time I was in junior high, obviously we had jazz band as well, which I fell in love with. And I got to play drum set in school. So I did that, then went into high school and did jazz band, concert band, wind ensemble, vocal jazz ensemble. And I just immersed myself. And I think by the time I was a senior in high school, I had 5 classes of music, weight training, and history. That was my class schedule, you know, and it was
slightly busy.
Yeah, and slightly no education other than me. I turned my high school into Berklee School of Music. I was like, I'm signing up for all the music classes. Zero yep. period, staying after, we'll do marching band. And in that time, I always took private lessons. I never, ever went a week without private lessons, even if I had to switch teachers because they said I didn't practice. I think my main influences at the time were whoever had a video out with DCI, you know, which is now Hudson Music. I had the Dennis Chambers one, the Dave Weckl Back to Basics. I had the Simon Phillips one. I'd even go to the music store and beg to buy their sampler DVD, or sampler videotape that had like a 10-minute clip of every video coming out that year. And I would watch those over and over again. And then my biggest influence, and this always kind of shocks people, my biggest influence of all time at that time in my life was Phil Collins. I watched his concert videotapes every single day. My mom just wanted to vomit at how much I watched this thing over and over again. And I thought he was the greatest, you know, not drummer. I thought he was the greatest musician. I loved that he played drums from the singer's perspective. So even though maybe his drumming wasn't the hardest thing in the world, he was making smarter choices than I would have made. And so I was always fascinated by not his drumming, but by why did he do that right there? Like, I wouldn't have thought to do that. So that, to me, makes him above me, because even though I can play it now, I'm really just copying him, but I wouldn't have made that choice in the first place. And so I was fascinated by Phil Collins. So that was kind of my, you know, day one all the way through high school with drums.
Cool. So we'll talk a little bit more about some other names I'm going to throw at you later on.
Sure.
Just to throw you a monkey wrench there. But
yeah.
A few weeks ago, I saw you on a video where you had a local TV station, and it was at the end of last year, and you mentioned that you had spent some time touring.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that phase of your career and why you chose to leave it?
Sure. I lucked into a teaching gig at a music store. I was just a normal, in my time, this is before, you know, all of the chain stores that we have now. There were just mom and pop drum shops. And if you worked in the drum shop, you were, you know, that was a prestigious thing, and you didn't come in and leave. It was like something you would stay at for years, and the whole community would know that you're the drum shop guy.
Yep.
And so I got a job at this place called Drum and Guitar City, which was just a massive music store. It was the luckiest thing that ever happened to me. And while working there, one of our teachers got fired, and the owner came to me, and I was 17, and he said, you know, apparently he had the same voice as my band teacher. He said, "Mike, you're going to have to be the teacher." And that was it. And so I started out with 65 students as a 17-year-old.
Wow.
And so anyways, I was doing that for about a year. And then at about 20, I think I, you know, around 2019, 20, my little rock band from my hometown, that we never had any aspirations other than hitting things as hard as we possibly could and breaking as many cymbals as possible, we got a record deal through Hollywood Records. And it wasn't like a little miniature record deal. This was a full-fledged, you know, Janet Jackson-style massive record deal.
Yep.
And I wasn't really that into it. I had no desire to ever leave my hometown. I've never thought about being a rock star. I always wanted to be, you know, involved in teaching somehow. And but I talked to my parents, and they said, "You will never have this opportunity again." You know, and I was like, "I want to go to Berklee School of Music, and I want to go to the new school," or it wasn't the new school yet in New York, but I wanted to go to some school on the East Coast. And
yeah.
And so my parents were like, "You'll never have this opportunity again. You have to do this now." And so I did it. And we were called Simon Says. We were on Hollywood Records, and we went out. Our first tour was with Filter. Then we went out with Limp Bizkit and with Deftones and Foo Fighters. So we went out with all these great rock star bands and played these massive shows. And I did that for about 6 years. And while doing that, we'd be playing these shows to, you know, some of those European festivals get pretty big. We'd play to, you know, 50, 60,000 people.
Wow.
And all I would do the whole time is think about what I was going to show the drummer from the bands we were on tour with as soon as the show was over. I was going to take him on our tour bus and bring out the pad, and I was going to teach him this thing and that thing. And I was thinking, dude, I am living so many people's dreams right now, and all I'm thinking about is teaching. And that's when it just kind of became clear to me, like, this is just not my path. You know, my band, we were a rock band, so rock bands do what rock bands do. And at the end of every single show, our band would go out to a bar or a club or whatever and party. And I'd be stuck on this tour bus by myself with my Fig Newtons and my Gatorade and a practice pad. And it was like, maybe I'm just not cut out for this lifestyle, you know? So I was, you know, very forward with my band and let them know, hey, I contacted about 10 drummers that are far superior to me, and I gave them the CD, and they're ready to audition for you guys, but I gotta go teach. And they were very cool with it. And that was kind of it. And from that moment on, I never looked back. I turned down a bunch of tours and, kind of touring lifestyle gigs. And I just focused on teaching.
That sounds almost noble there, Mike.
No, I promise, I've got massive flaws.
That's a great story. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and we'll get back to the online lessons that you obviously
sure.
that you're pretty much known for now. It's a couple of questions that, you know, come up in drummer conversation that I thought I'd throw them at you,
yeah.
See what your take is on it. The traditional versus matched grip debate. For lack of a better word, that's
sure.
been going on forever. And I noticed that in a lot of your instructional videos, you use match grip. And I wonder if you can give us your perspective on the grips and why you seems like you prefer to use the match grip.
Yeah, I think one matched grip, because I'm more of a rock drummer, matched grip obviously has it's easier to have power with matched grip. Now, there's some great traditional players out there that have tons of power. Todd Stuckerman comes to mind, Vinny Caliuta,
Stuart Copeland.
I mean, dude, that cat was breaking sticks left and right, traditional grip. So it's not that it's not possible, but it just came more naturally to me. The other thing was I was introduced to traditional grip much later in my drumming. So I was 10 years deep when I first joined marching band and when I first had a jazz band competition where they said, we're going to dock you points unless you play traditional. So it was kind of one of those things like, okay, I guess I'll do it. And then as I became a teacher, I had to start studying the grips so that I could teach properly. I'd study traditional grip, French grip, German grip, and what is now considered American grip, the in-between of French and German. And it just made so much more sense to start with the fulcrums in the exact same place, the hands in the same place on the stick, the technique exactly the same, because what is our main goal when we're trying to blaze a single stroke roll? Evenness. We're trying to be even. So to start with two different grips seemed kind of counterproductive, especially due to the fact that that grip was not created on the drum set. That grip was created with people wearing a drum on a sling off to the side. That's why it had to be that way. And we don't know if we ever would have had traditional grip if the drum set was our first, stick instrument or drumstick instrument. So if my students come to me and want to learn traditional, I let them absolutely, and I teach them that way. And if they already play traditional, I don't try to change them. But if they're brand new, I start them as matched grip.
Even Thomas Lang, he was such an advocate for traditional grip, and he recently changed his grip to matched.
Yeah. I think anybody that – the one thing that I do – I can tell you this. I just spent a week I do drum camps at my facility here, and I just had Benny Greb take my job for a week. I talked to him. He said he was interested in teaching in the U.S., and I just said, well, dude, I'm doing these camps. If you want, you could do one of the camps, and I'll take the week off. I've never had a vacation. Let's try it. And so he came in. And we spent so much time kind of going through all that stuff. And the one thing that came up with the traditional grip when we were teaching these students together was the one thing I love about traditional grip is the fact that it puts you in the mindset of jazz visions in your head. And when you go to traditional grip, you just immediately feel, I hate this as an adjective, but you feel jazzier. And it's a terrible adjective because jazz is such an incredible art form, but you feel jazzier and it puts you in the right mindset. So whenever I'm doing a jazz lesson, I'm usually playing traditional, but not for the technique advantage of it. I'm doing it because it puts me in that kind of, Elvin Jones, Max Roach kind of world where I play a different style when I'm playing traditional grip. So
it's like a different feel.
It really is. Just like you're going to play different grooves on a bebop kit because all of your rock stuff isn't going to work with that, boomy 18-inch bass drum and the timbali sounding rack tom. It's like you just kind of start swinging your grooves a little bit more. And so I think envisioning something in your head really will help your playing a lot.
That's great. That's good stuff. There's another question that comes up with drummers is the bass pedal technique as far as heel up versus heel down. What's your take regarding these pedal techniques and kind of how do you implement them?
Well, it's very odd that I have so many people come to me to study bass drum technique, but really what they're trying to get is my bass drum result. I don't ever show my foot on camera, very rarely. The only time I've ever showed my foot on camera is to prove that I'm not playing double bass. But because of having a fast foot, I have so many people that want to study my technique, and when they get here, they're so bummed to find out that I have no technique. I tell them, look, man, DW sends me a pedal. I take it out of the box, and however the cat built it is how it goes on my drum set. I don't adjust anything. I don't know what tight spring is, loose spring. I have no idea. I put it on the drum set. I press it down, and it hits the drum, and that's my technique. And they're so bummed that there's no secret. And the secret is I practice like crazy for 3 years to get this desired result. And so my thing with all my students is we don't share the same shoe size. We are not the same height. We are not the same weight. So for me to give Shaquille O'Neal my exact technique is going to absolutely backfire on him. So what I do is I say, here's the desired result. We're shooting for this desired result. sit down and work like crazy to achieve that result, and your body will figure out the proper technique for yourself. Between heel up and heel down, I play heel up almost all the time, mainly because I play at a higher or a louder volume. When I do play, if I'm swinging a tune and I'm just kind of feathering the bass drum, then I do go to a heel down technique and pull off of the bass drum head. But yeah, with my students, I just kind of say, hey, here's our goal. Let's, you know, from A to Z, we got to get here. And when we get to your goal, let's both look down and see what your foot's doing. But, you know, if I said my technique, you know, I have kind of a skiff technique. My technique's the only way to go. And then someone sees Dave Weckl, who's doing this kind of shuffle side to side thing. They're going to go, well, what about Dave Weckl? He's pretty awesome. And what am I supposed to say? It's like, no, Dave, don't worry about him. He's nothing. You know, it's like, yeah, you're right. He's pretty much amazing, you know? And so I'm more driven by desired results than I am technique to get those results.
That's a pretty refreshing view on that, because I think it puts the onus on the student to practice, to develop their own technique, whatever feels right to them. So
sure.
That's really good. So you're not a double bass player.
No, that's an understatement. I am super not a double bass player.
Why is that? I have double bass pedals on mine, and I don't use them all the time. It's like more for accentuation and to mimic the drummers that I like, but
sure.
You don't use them.
No, and you know, when Benny was here for the last week, I had his kit. We have like 6 kits here in the facility, but on the stage that I was showing you earlier, we had his kit set up because that's where he was doing all of his stuff. And he has a double bass pedal, and he uses it about as tastefully as it can possibly be used. I loved his double bass stuff, but I never even put my foot on it once. Didn't even try it. I've probably only played double bass, had my feet on them maybe 4 times in my life. The reason why is, one, I don't play the music that requires it. So when I grew up in rock, my world of rock was you know, Melvins, Failure, Quicksand, a lot of bands that people haven't heard of, but it was slow, hardcore rock. So it wasn't what we have now for metal. It was very slow. Everything was halftime. You know, everything was Deftones. I'm from the same town as the Deftones, so that's what I grew up with. So it never showed up in my musical applications. Obviously, if it did, I would have played it because I can't cheat the music. The other reason why I don't play it is because I'm not ready for it yet. I have so much to work on my hands, so much to work on single pedal, so much to work on my independence, and so much to work on my feel that it'd almost be like learning the piano or the bass. It'd be a new instrument, and it's like I cannot take away from my time right now to learn this new instrument when I need so much work at my current instrument. So
I think you're okay for now.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all of us feel the same. We're never where we want to be.
Yeah, I'm never satisfied. I always want to have something to work on. All right, let's go talk a little about the website and how that came about. How'd you get started with online lessons, and do you still teach offline?
So Mikeslessons.com came about really through YouTube. I was teaching at a music store here in Sacramento, and I wasn't doing full-out tours, but I would do like 1 week with this band. I was doing a lot of fill-in tours where the band had a drummer, they were a signed band, but he just sprained his ankle and they needed me for 3 days or whatever. And so when I would do those little things, I would make video lessons for my students. And I'd put this on this brand new website called YouTube. It was, no one even knew the address for this thing. I had to always send them links. So I put these lessons on YouTube, and then I would say, okay, here's the link to your lesson. I'm going to go on tour for a week and I'll see you next week. Well, if I gave that to 12 students, I would expect that to have 12 to 25 to 100 views. I'd get back and there'd be like 30,000 views. And I was like, oh, that's gotta be a mistake. Like, who on earth would want to watch a drum lesson on a website? You know, that's just weird. You know, and, I mean, I was still excited about DVDs at the time. So,
yeah.
So then I'd put out another one, you know, I'd go on another tour, and all of a sudden the first one has 100,000 views and the new one has 50,000 views. I'm telling my students, did you tell somebody about this, or why is this happening? Because I was thinking, that's 50,000 people. That's unreal. And so eventually I just thought, man, if I just had 99 cents from every one of those, we'd be good. I could, you know,
yep.
I could get a Honda Civic and everything would be great, you know, or whatever it was at the time. And so I made this website called Mikeslessons.com. I took night on online night classes on how to build websites. I built the whole thing by myself, and I learned HTML, and I learned ActionScript for Flash, and I learned JavaScript, and I learned a little bit of PHP, and I got through all that, and I made this website. And that was, and the whole idea was kind of iTunes for drum lessons. I wanted to make sure for 99 cents at the time that anything you could think of as a single subject, I would have a 5-minute video on it. So if you were on your way to a gig and you didn't know what the cumbia was, you just go to mikeslessons.com and download this thing straight to your video or to your computer or your iPod. And for 99 cents, you have the cumbia. Because the problem I had with the DVDs, which I still have, is I don't want to spend $50 for one chapter that I'm trying to get out of that thing. DVDs are really expensive. And I thought, well, what if I just offered all the chapters individually? So that became that. And then as that was going on, I got interviewed just like this on Skype from a guy from South Africa that ran that wrote for a magazine called SADP, South Africa Drum and Percussion. And he told me that a lot of the drummers in South Africa, that I was their teacher. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, we download all your lessons. That's how we learn drums. It's not, drum lessons aren't really much of a job here. So we don't have a lot of drum teachers. Our economy doesn't support it. And I thought, that's great, but that's terrible. I would never want anybody to learn how to play drums from those 5-minute clips. Those are for guys that can play drums, but are missing some information. So that's when I decided to go live and do live online lessons, which at the time was unheard of. Like, I couldn't find even a way to do it. No matter how much money I offered some tech company, they were like, that's not, you know, you're going to have to Skype it. And I was like, no. I want to do 1,000 people at once. I don't want to do one-on-one. And I found out that the Chicago Cubs were doing that with their baseball games. So I contacted the Chicago Cubs organization, asked them for their IT manager, and I just was relentless. And I was like, I want to do this for drums. And they're like, you're crazy. We're not going to give you our secrets. And I just kept chipping away until I found out the companies they were working with. And then it just took off from there, you know.
Well, that's a good lesson for us, for the listeners, that, you know, if you have a vision, you do whatever you can to realize that vision.
Yeah, that's one thing. I definitely don't have any talent on the instrument, and that's not being modest. I mean, I've taught enough students to see talent in the works, and I really don't have any talent on the drums. I have hard work and desire and all that, and that's how I become proficient in my instrument, and that's definitely a work in progress. But the one talent that I have is if it gets in my head, it's not stopping until I get there, ever. Like, it's always been like that with me. So, yeah, when I had the vision of that, it was like, I'll come to Chicago. We're talking to somebody. Like, I'll go to your office, you know. Now it's heaven to be able to teach drummers all around the world in countries that I cannot even pronounce, and they tell me I'm the only drummer in my village, so I have no possibility for lessons. It's a dream come true.
And that's really what led me to talk to you. Really, it's all of the offerings that you have at your website. It's kind of a selfish thing, because I was looking for something, because I'm a self-taught drummer. I never took lessons. And sure, I thought, well, now's the time to, you know, get some technique down, really, you know, learn about the rudiments and that kind of thing. So I started looking, and I don't even remember how I found you. It was like a few months ago, whatever, and I was really impressed. So I got into, you know, your offering. So what I want to do is, if you could, like, sum up a little bit, a few of the offerings that you have at mikeslessons.com, what kind of things a visitor would see and what they can get out of your site.
Sure. I mean, we really have three main products. The first product would be downloadable lessons. And those are always, well, for the most part, $1.99. And those are 5 to 7 minute videos that you own. You just download them. They're $1.99. You download it straight to your desktop, and then you can put it on your iPod, or you can put it on a DVD, or you can do whatever you want with it. And those I try to make kind of like an encyclopedia, like anything you could ever think of for the drums, plus all of my random goofy lessons, you know, the extreme crossover, double, diddle, flamamatic-cue, like, you know, just the dumbest.
I've seen those, they're funny.
Yeah, the dumbest thing that I could ever think of, you know, polyrhythmic, beat displaced, metric modulated hoopla. And so there's that, but then there's also, you know, if you want to learn you know, the songo and some songo variations, or your rudiments or whatever. And so those are the downloadable lessons. Then we have the live service, and that's $19.99 a month. And that gives you 12 lessons a month. We do Monday, Wednesday, and Sunday. Sunday is beginner, Monday is intermediate, and Wednesday is advanced. And each lesson is a full live broadcast. We do 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that's usually for the UK. That's the evening for the UK, South Africa, and I believe the next day in Australia. Then we do 5 p.m., and that's mainly evening in the East Coast. And then we do 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that's evening in the West Coast. And each one of those lessons comes with a PDF of whatever I'm teaching, so sheet music that you get to keep. You download it and print it out. And it comes with MP3s. So every single thing I teach, you get a slow play-along and a fast play-along of it. And they last for about 3 minutes. So it's not like just some little one-bar thing. It's a long thing for you to keep practicing to. And so we do that 3 times a week. So it's 12 lessons a month. And that's $19.99. That's our most popular service. That's the live lessons. And you get to talk to me. It's fully live. So even though we'll have maybe 500-600 people watching a lesson, only about 30 or 40 people will really get involved in the chat room, and they'll be talking to our chat screener, Amber, and they ask the questions, and she then asks them to me over a microphone, and I answer the questions live on camera. So that's really helpful for people where I can't type the answer. It's like, man, I'm going to have to show this to you. And then the last service, we just started with Benny Greve, and I believe we have some other artists that I can't mention until I lock them down, but some big-time artists coming in, and that's live online drum clinics. So I'm always getting told, man, I wish you'd come to the UK, or I wish you'd come here, I wish you'd come there. And so I started talking to other professional drummers, and I said, guys, I have a way that we could go everywhere. We could just do this live online. They'd be able to ask questions like normal, and it'd be a two-hour clinic, 1 hour of myself and 1 hour of this guest artist. So we did Benny Greve, actually Dante Roberson, the drummer for The Whispers and In Vogue. We did the very first one about 3 weeks ago, and it went amazing. And then, because we have, you know, I usually try to do something with the artist. So with Dante, we did odd time signatures. I broke down what odd time signatures are and how to think of them. And then he showed from a musical application, a touring session drummer, well, how do we actually play these things and make them feel great? And then we just did the one this week with Benny Greve. So those are our three services. We have downloadable lessons, live lessons, and then live online pay-per-view clinics.
And how does YouTube fit into that? Because I think that's how I found you first, is when I found you on YouTube.
Yeah. The YouTube thing, I mean, everything I have is I got from YouTube, so I can't ignore them. It's a very delicate balance of me being able to use YouTube as almost like a blog and give them information. And then but the problem is a lot of my information comes with a cost. It's me telling you, hey, I just released these three videos. So it's an advertisement. And
right.
I don't want it to be like that, but it's like, I'm just telling you it's available. You know, with me and Benny Greve, it's like, I have to tell you, I do not want you to miss an hour to hang out with one of the greatest drummers in the world right now. You know, and you just have to sit through my hour. It's no big deal. And so it's like, but I also feel bad going like, all right, this is my third YouTube video about this. These guys are going to get kind of upset because they're used to me giving them free drum lessons, and they deserve that because they've supported me so much. So I try to balance it out. You know, I'll kind of look at my history and go, all right, I've had two videos where really all I did was talk about my new offerings. So now it's time for just a straight up drum lesson. And usually what I'll do with the YouTube stuff is stuff that I think is valuable, but it doesn't really fit into my website. So if it's like just a lick and I don't have any name for it and it has nothing to it, it's like, okay, that's cool for YouTube. That's just a little fun treat that is valuable, but I don't really feel that it has a place on my site, and I don't feel comfortable charging $1.99 for it or whatever the price is. So,
Make up a name for it.
I usually do. It'll be like, you know, the up, down, turnaround, pick a bale of paradiddle lick, you know, and then I just love the thought of somebody going around, you know, their hometown being like, oh, you didn't learn the up, down, pick a bale of paradiddle lick from Mike Johnston. You know, I think that's awesome because that happens all the time. People will be like, oh, you don't know the druffle or something. And I'm like, the what? And then I look it up and I'm like, that's a cool lick, man. That guy's awesome. So, you know, it's just fun.
So you have then all of these different ways that a student could, you know, choose to learn from you.
Sure.
And so what's the best way that they could combine the different, I mean, you talked about taking lessons. I don't know. You still give lessons offline too, like to individuals, or like if a student wanted to learn using your site, what would be the best way?
Well, I think the best thing would be to start with the live lessons, because just having that interaction is important. Our live students also have the option of uploading videos of themselves to the front page of our website for me to check out. And in the future, in our new website that we'll be launching in a couple months, we'll have categories that they can upload videos to. So they can upload videos of them asking a question, they can upload a performance, and they can upload them playing the lesson. And I'll be checking in, obviously devoting most of my attention to the questions and them playing the lesson, and then as much time as I can to them performing. But I think signing up for the live lessons is key because, one, instantly you're part of a drumming community. They're online chatting with other drummers. They're learning that you don't have to be scared of other drummers. Every drummer is either one of two things. He's either better than you or he's not as good as you. So either way, it's a win-win because if he's better than you, then you can learn something from him. If he's not as good as you, then you can teach him something. So either way, it's a great situation to be friends with other drummers. So if I was a new drummer or if there was a new student, I would recommend they sign up for the live lessons. And then there are some simple packages that where we just took like 20 videos and made them the price of 10 videos. And there's a rudiments package, which would be good for any beginner. There's a double stroke roll package that takes you from 60 beats per minute all the way up. Each video goes up 10 beats per minute, and I train with you and teach you how that I built my double stroke roll because that thing was not fun as an 8-year-old. I just couldn't get it down. So there, you know, I think a combination of those two, and then really, one thing that our students, you know, I want them to take advantage of is I'm as interactive with you as you are with me. Now, obviously, we have a total of about 4,000 students that are using our site on a weekly basis between the live lesson subscribers and the people that download our iPod lessons. I can't personally keep track of all of them, but I can if they contact me. So the people that hit me up on Facebook, that ask for my cell phone number so we can text, it's like I'll be involved as much as I can. You know, I love when a student says, hey, can we talk? I have $150 to spend on a cymbal and I have no idea what to get. And I'm always like, dude, call me when you get to the music store. And yes, we can talk. Like, I will help you through this process and it will have nothing to do with my endorsements. I play for Peisty cymbals and I constantly tell these guys, tell the guy at the music store to pull out every cymbal he has at the $150 range and hit them all and pick your favorite. I don't care which one you get. There's no way in the middle of Wisconsin one crash cymbal sold is going to get, you know, told to Peisty and they're going to say, hey, just so you know, it's like, just be happy. I would assume just like you, Omar, that we're drum fans. So even though I have endorsements, I still love drums. I play for DW, but dang, I love a good Gretsch kit. I play for Peisty, but a good, you know, Dave Weckl's K Custom Dry Ride. Ooh, all day on that first video back when he was playing that thing.
Yeah.
On Back to Basics. So it's like, you know, that's kind of how it goes. As far as getting involved in the site is I try to be as involved as I can, but it's up to the student to kind of get to me, you know, so that we can start a relationship.
So I'm afraid to ask if you ever get any sleep.
I honestly, no. I think, you know, it's funny sometimes when I brag about 3 to 4 hours of sleep, I'm like, I'm refreshed today, you know. I think right now I'm at about, I don't know, usually I think you have about, 70 to 80% water in your body, and I think I'm mostly 40 to 50% green tea. I have, like, no water left. I just replaced it with green tea, and I'm running on pure adrenaline and energy at all times. But I you know, I love it that way. Like, the opportunity to make a living doing what was supposed to be your hobby is the greatest thing in the world, so I can't allow, you know, laziness to get in the way of that.
That's really great stuff. Again, we're talking with Mike Johnston of mikeslessons.com. Do you plan on playing again in a band, or is this something that you foresee, you know, pretty much taking up your time for a while?
Well, here's the problem with the band situation, especially in my town of Sacramento. One, we have some great rock bands that have come out of here. The Deftones, Papa Roach, Far, Tesla, obviously. I mean, can't beat Tesla. Cake. So we have a lot of signed bands. The problem with being in a band in Sacramento is if it's a good enough band for you to be happy playing in, they probably want to leave Sacramento. So I've done it before where I was so excited to have this kind of, you know, monthly gig at our local rock club and, you know, put all the ego aside and play to 9 people. And it's like, dude, I just want to hit some drums. Let's go have fun. The problem is, they get better and better and better, and we start to grow a following, and then instantly they're like, we're going to go get a record deal. And I'm like, can you please not get a record deal? I want to stay home. And then so I end up having to find them one of my students to be their new drummer, and then they go get a record deal and they go do their thing. So I do miss playing with people a lot, but I have so little time for it. I think I'd like to incorporate some musicians into my live lessons, so then it's kind of a double whammy. I can play with people, but I can also teach how to play with people at the same time. I mean, the most influential teacher I've ever had, besides Pete Magadini, who was my main teacher, was his name was Joe Gilman. He's a piano teacher here in Sacramento. And I just got this kind of weird thing in my head that, why do I keep taking drum lessons? I'm a decent drummer at this time. This is about 10 years ago. I thought, I'm a decent drummer. I don't need drum lessons. I need music lessons. So I hired Joe Gilman to, I'd bring my drum set to his house, and we'd play jazz together. And his job, you know, he didn't get it either. He said, what are you doing? I said, what I need you to do, you need to tell me what you would prefer from your perspective. I don't need the drummer's perspective. I need the piano player's perspective. So we would play jazz, and then he'd just stop me and say, hey, I'm taking a solo. You can't be on that cymbal anymore. And it's like, okay, well, that's not hard for me to do. I just didn't know to do it. So, you know, I'd like to do that for my students, bring in a bass player, jam with him a little bit. And then instead of me say something, I want the bass player to say, okay, do you hear how his hi-hats are kind of sloshy? Well, I'm playing a real funky bass line. I don't like those sloshy hi-hats. And it's like, all right, let me tighten them up for you. So I think that would be really beneficial, and it'd give me a way to start playing with musicians again.
Right, and that way, when you talk about when you're teaching groove or time, when you show about putting a fill in a, you know, in the context of a band, you can actually show it with other band members.
Exactly, and I can do it wrong, and, you know, and I can ask the bass player, okay, I know why that was wrong, but why was that wrong to you? And he can say, dude, I wasn't done with my phrase yet. We weren't there. You know, you did a fill. That's an epidemic that's going on right now, which is, you know, I'll ask students, why did you do that fill right there? And they'll say, because I hadn't done one in a while. And I'm like, oh, boy. if you know, so I have this thing called fill auditing with my students. We record them playing a song. I sit down with them. I know we're going on tangents here, but
that's fine.
I sit down with them, and I audit their fills. And so just like an accountant would, I pull out every fill they do. I press pause and I say, why did you do that? And if their reason makes sense, musical sense, they say, well, we were going to the chorus and I was letting the audience know that, hey, we're about to go somewhere. Okay, well, that's okay. If they say, I have no idea, then it's like, all right, well, then you're going to jail. You're going to drum jail. Like, that was illegal. You cannot do that if you don't even know why you did it. Because I think licks, you know, and I'm part of that, man. I mean, I've seen my YouTube videos. I'm part of those licks and chops. And it's my fault that I haven't made a better effort to tell you the responsibility you have with those licks and chops. And Benny Greb and I spent a lot of time talking about how we're both going to try to improve that in the future of education.
That's great stuff, Mike. I got a couple more questions for you. You got time for a couple more?
Are you kidding, my friend? This has like been the coolest like drum check I've ever had. I'm in heaven, man.
That's awesome. What you were talking about kind of led me to my next question, actually. You're talking about your musical influences, not just drumming influences. So, like, what drummers or musicians today inspire you?
Well, you know, I'm pretty lucky that I just have Benny Greb here, because he has been my biggest drum influence for a while. I really enjoy that no matter how crazy stuff he's doing, his main focus is the groove of that. And so I've seen him do all this chaotic Thomas Lang multi-pedal orchestration, you know, chaos, but it almost felt like Steve Gadd was playing it, you know? And until he got here and I got to spend a week with him, I didn't know that was a focus. I didn't know. I thought maybe that was just natural. I didn't know that he really put some effort into that. So definitely Benny Greb. I would never, ever, you know, deny the influence that the Masters have had on me. You know, Dave Weckl and Vinnie Colaiuta both were huge. I also, especially for the young drummers out there, I won't deny that my ears still, at the age of 33, and I've been playing since I was 6, my ears still aren't ready for some of our masters. Unfortunately, I can't hear Tony Williams the way that other people can. I just recently started hearing Elvin Jones. And what I mean by hearing is Elvin Jones used to just sound like kind of noise to me. And then one day my ears clicked and I heard the genius inside it. Well, that took a while. And I cannot wait for my ears to turn on to hear what all the great drummers hear in Tony Williams. And it totally saddens me that I don't hear it yet. Now, I obviously can recognize the difficult nature in it, but I haven't heard the genius in it yet.
Right.
and I can't wait to. So I look forward to that. And then, but Dave Weckl, Vinny Caliuta, definitely Todd Zuckerman. His DVD, Mechanics and Method, or Methods and Mechanics, just blew me away. Definitely Chris Coleman, sonar artist, plays with Israel and the New Breed. Love him. And Spanky, George McCurdy. I think he's out with Lady Gaga right now. And he has a huge influence from Chris Daddy Dave, who plays with Maxwell and Mint Condition and a ton of other artists. So those guys are kind of, you know, where it's at for me drumming right now. I like the mixture of chops and groove. I will never lie that and pretend that, oh, I'm not blown away by cool licks. I am. I'm a kid when it comes to drums. You do something fast, I perk up. I'm like, oh, that was great.
Yep.
But when you do it in the right spot with the right groove and the right feel, then it's not great. It's magic. So, you know, the drummers that do that are the guys that I look up to.
Well, in that case, then, you mentioned some names already, part of my next question. I'm going to rattle off a few names in the drumming community and just give me a short blurb of the first thing that comes to your mind, you know, when you hear the name.
So, sounds great.
Okay, Chad Smith.
Massive power and groove, and I think pocket is the best word. He creates the pocket for everyone else in his band to fall into.
Thomas Lang.
Unbelievable facility. I think he didn't have to go to school because no one could possibly be that thorough on a drum set and still have to go to school as a child. I think his mom just let him stay home the whole day.
Yeah, probably. Stuart Copeland.
Man, the hi-hat master, and the only guy that can do whatever he wants with tempo, and it doesn't bother me one ounce because he does it in the right spot. He knows how to push a band, pull a band back. I could listen to his grooves all day long.
Carter Buford.
Carter is the luckiest son of a gun on earth because he is in a band. He gets to do the coolest drum stuff in the world and be on the radio at the same time. That was illegal all the way up until maybe Rush got away with it a little bit, a little bit of Primus, a little bit of, you know, a couple other bands. But once again, like his drumming is just smooth. I could listen to him play forever, man.
Tony Royster Jr.
I can tell you this. I just hung out with him recently at a DW event and I wasn't ready for how good he is. He might be one of the best drummers in the entire world right now. And for anybody that wants to say otherwise, they need to spend some time with him. Cause I spent a whole day with him and I could not believe how good he was. I didn't think he was that good. He's unbelievably amazing.
Steve Gadd.
Steve Gadd is actually an adjective now. You just say Steve Gadd and everybody knows what you're talking about. That's how legendary he is. Probably, you know, a little more vast than people realize. If you want the craziest Vinny-esque fusion, Steve Gadd has it. If you want Steve Jordan pocket, Steve Gadd has it. If you want big band swing, he can shuffle a big band as hard as Buddy Rich. So he's just, it's almost like, well, why do we even play? He just does it all. What a jerk. Steve Gadd's a master.
I actually came up with a phrase for regarding him. Gadd is in the details.
Done. Game over. That's a wrap. Exactly.
Yeah. Steve Smith.
Steve Smith is the ultimate technician. I also think he's the ultimate historian. Not very many people. You can call out any drummer on earth, and he can play exactly like that person and tell you why they played that way and tell you what led up to them playing that way. So the ultimate technician.
Okay, just three more names for you.
Bring them. I love it.
Neil Peart.
Neil. I would say trendsetting. I don't know another drummer besides maybe Travis Barker that caused so many people to start playing drums a certain way.
Benny Gribb.
Jerk. Very, very rude in person. Benny is so far, the drums aside, the deepest drummer I've ever met. I've never spent time with somebody that cared so much about the nuances and the details of drumming as Benny does.
And Mike Johnston.
Yeah. Cocky, arrogant. No, I think right now I'm in the middle of trying to create an educational legacy, not a drumming legacy, and I just want someday to be known as the guy that could explain anything to anybody. I'm lucky enough that I've grown up in a new age of drumming education as far as technology, and I actually do have to sit down and think, how am I going to explain this to a kid in China that can barely speak English? And so every YouTube video I make has that in mind. Uh-huh. And I hope that that's my legacy, that I was able to explain anything to anyone.
That's great. So what do you see happening in the future for yourself and mikeslessons.com? Where do you see it going from here?
I just want more community. I'm so, so tired of drummers treating any time they get together as a battle. To me, you know, me playing, you know, me and you sitting down and I go, okay, Omar, go as fast as you can. And then as soon as you're done, I'll go as fast as I can. That's so counterproductive to music right now. And so to sit down and say, all right, Omar, I'm going to play something and I don't want you to play until you can think of something that will make me sound better. If you can add to this, jump on in. I think I want to figure out a way for my website to get more of that going. Our new website will actually have a proximity locator, so you'll be able to type in your zip code, and it will tell you all of the mikeslessons.com students that live in a certain radius of you so that you can hook up with other drummers. And then the other thing is obviously just improving the quality. You know, a lot of my video lessons from 2 years ago are meant to be on iPods. People weren't able to even play an iPod on their TV a couple years ago. So now the resolution has to be higher. And I think right now, I used to have this thing where I used to say, man, if I keep going this route, I'm going to have to play with Benny Greb someday or something. Well, that day just happened. You know, it ended yesterday. And I need to get my drumming to a much, much higher level so that, because we're here, you know, I think I'm doing a clinic at PAS next year. I'm flying to Alaska in a couple of weeks to do two master classes at the university in Juneau. And so those days are here, and it's like being a great educator isn't enough. I need to really take my drumming to a new level. So I think my focus is on my own personal playing.
Well, that's very good stuff, Mike. I really appreciate it. And very inspiring, actually.
Awesome. Omar, by the way.
Yay.
You got this thing on point, man. I could talk to you for hours, buddy.
We'll have to do this again, definitely.
Paradiddler is where it's at.
So, do you have any words of encouragement besides for me, which I really appreciate it, to give our audience before we sign off?
I would say the most important thing, guys, is just if you can narrow down your goals, you will get there. If you keep your goals broad, you will kind of get there. And the best example I can tell you is if you look at a map of the U.S. and I told you that I need to go to the East Coast from the West Coast, there's a billion ways to get there. If I told you I need to get to this address in Manhattan, New York, and this exact street, you could MapQuest it and have exact directions for me. So, you know, when you narrow down your goals, it's easy to draw a map to those goals. When you just say, I want to get better at drums, it's a fluffy goal that you maybe even go in the wrong way and you wouldn't even know. So it's very important to narrow down your goals. And once you do that, you'll probably achieve them. I know very few people that have exact goals and don't achieve those goals. So please do that.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for those words. And it's been really fantastic talking to you. I had a blast. I think I might have more fun than you, actually.
Anytime, Omar. Anytime, man. This has been a real treat for me. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Great. I wish you a lot of success in all your ventures.
Thank you so much.
Again, that was Mike Johnston of mikeslessons.com. You can go to his website for even more information regarding his drumming videos, courses, drum camps, etc. Or you can go to theparadiddler.com. That's theparadiddler.com. And I'll have his information posted there as well. I want to give a shout out also to Amber at mikeslessons.com for all her help in getting Mike and I together. She was awesome. So once again, thanks to Mike Johnston, and thanks to all of you for listening. Till next time, keep on drumming. Goodbye.